This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insight and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We are committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 3rd of February. It's 2017. My name's Jamie Veitch. I'm your host for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. We're broadcasting as ever live on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. This programme is also available as a podcast afterwards. You'll be able to find it from about 11 a.m. on the Sheffield Live website. And talking about podcasts, last Friday's programme featured tech entrepreneur Elizabeth Chasser. She's launched a tech startup in her 40s. She's blogged about all the challenges that she's faced and how she's overcome them. And then she came on the programme last week to talk about that. We also had Jay Biani of Biani HR and Employment Law giving us an update on what we need to know, what you need to know if you're running a business and social enterprise in the constantly changing world of employment law. And on the programme last week was Joe Hertzberg of the Real Junk Food Project, going from strength to strength, and she talked about scaling a social enterprise. Now, if you missed that, get it from the podcast section of the Sheffield Live website. Go to shows, find Business Live, and you'll find it there. But that was then, and this is now. So what's coming up today? Well, I'm delighted to welcome to the programme today Mark Harvey. Mark is a photographer, and he is working with Tim Renshaw of the Arch Project and Vicky Ward to organise a symposium looking at representations of homelessness. Now, Mark, good morning. Thank you very much for coming in. So, representations of homelessness, when you look for visual representations, for pictures to represent homelessness, when you see stories in the media about homelessness, the pictures that are used are often all of a certain type. And I understand that that's the rationale, that's the reason behind the event that you've set up and you're organising.
Yes, it was, I can't say it's academic research, but when I Googled pictures of homelessness UK, I was just confronted with page after page after page of the stereotypical image. And after, I'm volunteer at the Cathedral Arch Project, and I've been doing that for about 2 years. And that type of representation doesn't reflect the people that I work with and their situations. And so I've seen this, well, I think there's a gap there between people that experience, it's not just homelessness, it might be any sort of difficulty or they've got some form of, you know, they're vulnerable or they're disadvantaged in some way, and the way that they're portrayed or that the media use them, in the impression that we've got, that the public have of their situations. So that's what I'm trying to explore, is the representation of homelessness. And this is through photography.
Through photography. And you, of course, you have worked extensively looking at the complexities of homelessness in your work in the past. And you've worked on projects yourself that have put cameras into the hands of people behind the photographs, if you like. So what's going to happen at the symposium that you're hosting with the Cathedral Arch Project, with Vicky, with Bank Street Arts?
What I'm hoping to start is a dialogue and just bring people together to then discuss this issue and see if there are ways that we can either connect individuals, organisations or businesses together and see if we can start changing the narrative.
So change the narrative in terms of representation. Yeah.
And how I've just been part of a project at Sheffield University with first year students. And one of the questions one of the students asked me is, how can I be more compassionate? And I thought that was quite an interesting question, because I think we all like to think of ourselves as being compassionate, but it's how do you show that? How do you give that? What does it mean? And then when you're confronted with a situation on the street where someone is begging, then do we show compassion by giving them money? Do we show compassion by supporting organisations that work with them? Or what is our actual understanding of what that person is representing? So that's why I'm interested to sort of explore these issues, because the person who's begging on the street, that's a very complex, there might be a very complex issue around mental health, vulnerability. We represent, or we think that's a representation of homelessness, but then what about women, say with children, that are homeless? Where are they? They're not visible. So it's this whole issue about what the representation around homelessness means.
And that's a really good point, isn't it? Because as you say, there is homelessness, which isn't necessarily visible, but people who are so-called sofa surfing, that's the only way to live, to get by, or living in hostels. But the media will very often use a picture of perhaps a vulnerable young male to represent a story. So you talked about quite a number of things there, and homelessness was discussed in November, December extensively in Sheffield, when some commentators were telling the public not to give money directly to homeless people, but to, if they wanted to do something, to perhaps donate to charities such as Cathedral Arch projects, such as Roundabout and others too. And were perhaps saying that if you're giving money to people directly on the street, that was perpetuating a problem. Now, is that assumption misrepresenting the experience of homeless people as well, and categorising them all as drug users or alcohol abusers?
Quite rightly, because I do know rough sleepers that don't beg. I know rough sleepers that they want a respectability. They want to be seen as being part of society. And on that, the point about giving money, I think it's the context. So if you do give money to someone that's begging, it's possibly trying to develop a relationship with them beforehand. So it isn't just that case that handing over money is sometimes we think of that as being conditional, where we expect them to people to spend it on food or help their rent or whatever. But it's if you build up a relationship with someone, so you can just start off by saying hello to them. Some people I work with say just being appreciated by someone talking to them is actually quite a big step. Not only for them, but it can also be a step for people that want to do something, because it is quite challenging. How do you, we put up a barrier between people, put up barriers between themselves and what we understand as being people disadvantaged, and they don't quite know how to broach that barrier. And it might be just as simple as saying hello.
And having a conversation.
Yeah, and then finding out their situation. And then that might give you an understanding of how you can help that person. So it might be buying a cup of coffee, buying food. I was told a story by someone who said they went and bought a sandwich for someone that was begging. And this person said, has it got meat in it? Because I'm a vegetarian. And, it was almost the situation where we assume that if you're homeless you can't be vegetarian, you should accept it's conditional what we give you should be accepting of that.
Indeed, and yet we're all people, we're all different. Yeah,
yeah.
So your event coming up in later on in February, Friday 24th, yeah, and that's at the Workstation Building.
It is, yeah. Yes.
So it's going to host an exhibition featuring photographs. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about those?
Yeah, as I said, I'm trying to use photography as a vehicle and the photographs as a vehicle to explore this issue. So there are three bodies of work in the exhibition. There's the first body of work is, we've called it Street View, which are photographs taken by people who have attended my group at Archer. So we gave them disposable cameras, they went out and they took pictures around Sheffield, and I wanted to see how they represented the city that we live in, and does it look different? Do they perceive it in a different way?
Yes.
The second body of work is dealing with, I took some portraits of people's bags, and I did this over about a 2-hour period. But then, rather than me just being a photographer, having the control, taking the picture of that bag, I wanted to then involve them in get them to write a sentence on the print about either their situation, what their bag meant to them, just to include them so they had some involvement in the work. And finally, I'm going to display a series of portraits where they are all of people that attend the Arch project, but I'm going to try and I'm looking at the positive side. So there are artists, there are musicians, there are people there that are writers, they can sing. It's looking at the positive side rather than just the representation of the negative. And then the other exhibition that is going to take place down at Bank Street on the starting the 27th of February will be an exhibition I've called a Box for My Bed, where I've gone round the city and looked to see how rough sleepers have reappropriated areas to create their homes. So it's using cardboard is obviously a very good material to use as insulation. So it's looking for where they've used cardboard to then sleep on, and just see see evidence of that.
Yes, yeah. So that sounds like a fascinating exhibition down at Bank Street.
Yes.
Afterwards. And that's going to run for what period of time?
I believe it's a week,
yeah,
but sometimes this can be flexible.
And you're, of course, a photographer in residence down at Bank Street
I
Arts
am.
As well. And what does that mean? How does that work?
I was unsure. I suppose I'm still unsure in some ways. But what I've realised, it's given me the space in my mind to then start exploring photography in other ways. So it's reinvigorated me, actually, which
yes.
is something I did not expect. And okay, it's just a title, but it's made me think of things in a different way, because as a photographer, you do become sometimes set in your ways and you develop a certain type of style or how you approach an event, a sequence. So you sometimes can produce pictures that tend to start looking the same after a while. So this has actually challenged me to stop thinking like that and just think of other ways, and which I find is invigorating.
Well, that sounds great. That sounds like a fantastic, stimulating role for you, because this comes after a long career in documenting what you might describe as social issues for a number of clients in public sector agencies and so on. And your work has been used in the national press and in all sorts of media as well. This event coming up, it's free to attend. It's on the 24th, but people will have to register, don't they?
Yes, yeah. Through Eventbrite.
Yeah, so I will tweet the link to that. There's also a crowdfund in support of the work that's being done here, and there are Rewards for people who back it, including a print from the Designers Republic, your own photographs and other things too. So we can put out a link to that as well after the show to today. But perhaps you'd like to come back on the show after the event's taken place and talk about it, and talk about reaction from people who attended as well. And
thank you very much, but I might see if I could bring someone who I work with down at the project, because I'm not a voice for them.
Yes.
It's all about allowing people to then talk about their own situations, how the project or this work is actually helping them, if it does help them. So it's not me speaking for people, it's allowing that the debate to then open out, so that we've all got a voice.
That sounds like an excellent point to close on, and we will follow that up and bring you and someone you're working with through the project back onto the show in March so that we can hear how it's gone.
Thank you very much.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for joining us today, Mark. That was Mark Harvey, photographer, who's working with the Cathedral Archer Project and putting on an event called Visual Images and Homelessness, Changing Representation or Perpetuating Stereotypes. That's a free event on the 24th of February. I'll tweet the link so you can register if you want to go along to it at the end of the programme. And thank you for joining us, Mark, and we look forward to welcoming you and someone from the project back onto the programme in March. You're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. We'll play a track of music now, and this is Of Monsters and Men. The track is Dirty Paws.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. Business Live is our weekly business and social enterprise programme, and you could be on the show yourself. How so? Well, just email Jamie at sheffieldlive.org or send a text to 07904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter, or Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. Because whether you're starting or running a business or a social enterprise, whether you're an employer or an employee, we're always keen to hear from you. And some of our guests end up on the show because they've done just that. They've got in touch, or someone else has nominated them and said, why don't you get so-and-so on the show? So why not? Give it a go. If you're doing something interesting, innovative, unusual, you think people should know about, then get in touch. What's going on in business and social enterprise this week? Well, the Bank of England has painted a brighter outlook for the UK economy this year, with faster growth, a more modest rise in inflation and lower unemployment. The bank has revised its earlier forecast to predict that the economy would grow by 2% this year, matching its 2016 performance. And that forecast was above the 1.4% figure that policymakers had penciled in for 2017 back in November. And it was a contrast, to the slowdown which had been predicted by the bank last year. But despite these more optimistic forecasts, the bank did highlight risks ahead. They expect business investment to fall and consumer spending to slow as rising inflation eats into household budgets. And they've also raised concerns about households becoming overstretched. Doncaster Council has announced that two-thirds of their budget is to be spent with local businesses. This amounts to more than £100 million of council work in 2016-17 to be awarded to Doncaster-based businesses. And the Mayor, Ros Jones, said that she was determined that Doncaster firms could bid for suitable contracts, and that by understanding what's involved in the procurement process, they could have every opportunity to win work. She says the council has put on workshops, organised events, and provided support for business owners so they understand the rules and can find available contracts, and that they can know how to prepare their tender bids. She says this work's paying off because the amount of work being won by local firms has increased by 34% in the last 4 years. and the FSB, the Federation of Small Businesses, has welcomed the news. Their regional chairman, Gordon Millward, commented that it's refreshing to hear that the council has taken measures to ensure local firms will be the first beneficiaries of their expenditure. He said this will retain prosperity in the local community and provide jobs for local people. And he said that by what they've done has, in the last 2 years, added £27 million annually to the local economy. Coming up in the show, I've got some announcements of some new schemes enabling social enterprises to access loan funding and grants for business projects looking at early stage design activities. So stay tuned for that. I'll tell you more. Plus, we've got some stuff on how to protect your intellectual property abroad coming up too. But we're going to take another break now for another track of music. It's the Bee Gees. It's a Tragedy.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. Business Live is our weekly business and social enterprise programme. First in the show today, we've heard from Mark Harvey. He's a photographer and he's interested in challenging visual representations of homelessness. He's doing a project with Bank Street Arts and the Cathedral Archer Project with an event coming up. Now, if you've only just tuned in and you've missed that, then don't panic because you can catch the podcast of today's programme. It will be up on the Sheffield Live website from about 11 a.m. Just go to sheffieldlive.org, go to radio shows, and you'll find Business Live. Whilst you're there, you could find last week's programme that featured tech entrepreneur Elizabeth Chasser. She's founded a business called Textocracy, and that's going from strength to strength. Another tech business going from strength to strength is in the room with us right now. I'm delighted to welcome to the studio Scott Woodley of Tutora. Scott, good morning.
Morning.
Thanks very much for coming in today.
No, thanks for having us.
So Tutora, really fascinating business. I've been watching your exponential growth with great interest. But for any listeners who haven't come across Tutora, what does the business do?
So Tutora is an online marketplace. We effectively help parents and students find the best tutors. We've got 6,000 tutors across the country. They cover every subject, every age. So if anyone's looking for help and support in their learning, we can provide that.
And so people who want a tutor, they say, OK, I want a maths tutor in whatever region, whatever area.
Yeah.
And then you find them someone through the site.
Yeah, so effectively they'd come to our site, which is tutora.co.uk. They'd enter their postcode and the subject they're looking to study. And then a list of all the best local tutors would come up. We vet those tutors to make sure that they're the best tutors when they come to join the site. And we also use algorithms based on all the data, because every lesson is booked on our site, to find the very best tutors. We pull those guys to the top whilst removing people who we don't think offer a great service. That means that we know that parents can effectively find the very best tutors for their children or for themselves.
So for parents, an invaluable service. For tutors themselves, is this a marketplace that they appreciate, that they enjoy being part of? Does it help them get work that that would have been much harder to get?
Yeah, very much so. I think most parents have kind of relied on word of mouth in the past. And tutors have similarly relied on being recommended by others, and it's quite a slow process. You'll walk around a city and you'll see kind of small little pictures in windows of shops, and it's just not very efficient. So we offer them a way of gaining new students really quickly, managing the whole of their business as well. We also kind of recommend resources to them where needed, and we're there always to support them, so they don't have to have those awkward conversations with parents at the end of lessons. All of the payments completely automated, so it's a great way for them to manage their businesses.
Super. And so why was the business set up? Was it direct need? Was someone looking for a tutor and couldn't find one? Or was it sort of spotting an opportunity?
Yeah, well, I was a primary school teacher and I absolutely loved it. But I'll say honestly that the bureaucracy was pretty difficult to cope with. I think a lot of teachers will empathise with that. But I love the teaching, and parents often came to me looking for a little bit of support. 1 in 4 children in the UK have had tuition at some point. It's a huge problem that parents are facing. It's really very difficult for them to find someone. So as a teacher, I kind of ended up taking on a few of those students myself. Was absolutely inundated, having left teaching to become a full-time tutor with requests. And at that point, I spoke to Mark, who's our my co-founder, he was working as a technology analyst for a large investment firm. And we looked at what was on offer for parents, and the solutions just weren't really there. So we decided to set Tutora up to effectively help parents as much as we can.
And your skills then, yours and Mark's, complementary?
Yeah, very much so. I think, it's really important that we've got different mentalities. Mark comes through it from a kind of tech background. He was involved in investment, so has an excellent business mind. I'd like to think I've got some of those skills, but I think for me, I understand the needs of parents and of tutors, so I can bring the kind of the user experience and make sure that people just to find exactly what they want from our site, both for tutors and the parents. So we kind of dovetail really nicely in that regard.
And so that's a great sort of fit in terms of co-founders,
yeah,
and working together. And the business has grown. The business is really making its mark now. You had a successful round of investment offered to the public last year through a crowdfunding website, but you went down the equity crowdfunding route.
Yeah.
And you've opened a new round now.
Yeah.
So what was the purpose of the investment round last year, and what's the purpose of the new investment round?
Yeah, so we've been really fortunate in how quickly we've grown. I say fortunate, I think we offer a really great solution to the problem. But we launched 18 months ago. As you say, April last year, we did a Crowdcube fundraise. We raised 150K at that point, and that just really let us scale. We were based kind of in a few of the major cities at that point, but we now cover the whole of the country. We're employing people here in Sheffield, which is fantastic. We're building a great team who are just superb. And ultimately, now we're seeking a second round. So we're back up on Crowdcube. That's crowdcube.com/tutora for anyone out there who's looking to get involved.
Let's tweet the link.
Thank you very much. So the aim now is to raise a little bit more finance than we did last time. We're building the team here in Sheffield. We want to deliver online tuition. We think that ultimately the market will shift towards that, and we want to offer that service to all of our tutors and parents. We're also looking to develop apps for parents so that they can find tutors really quickly and interact with their tutors a lot more easily, as well as the tutors to manage their own business. Ultimately, we're looking to expand internationally as well.
International expansion coming soon.
Yeah.
Or coming ultimately. Okay, great. Now, you've gone down the crowdfunding equity route, and that's really, really interesting. Presumably this second round of funding, and maybe the first round of funding, there would have been a whole range of options open to you.
Yeah.
Bank finance, loan finance, and so on. Possibly approaching VCs or angels,
yeah,
and so on. Did you use crowdfunding as part of a blended finance provision or crowdfunding alone? Why did you choose to go down the crowdfunding route?
Yeah.
Is it because it helps market the business or other considerations too?
No, definitely. I think there's lots of options available. People see funding as a very hierarchical structure where you're ultimately aspiring to institutional investment through VCs. But I think VCs come with their own huge benefits in the fact that they can follow on and invest at a later date, as well as the support they can offer and the links and the connections they have. But there are also other issues with having VCs, the control they have over the business, non-dilutable shares. And for us, crowdfunding on an equity basis was really a very natural fit. The business model is easy to understand. We provide a solution that so many people have been looking for, that ultimately it's one that they can identify with very quickly. And as you say, it's a great way of us actually bringing on new clients to the business, because a lot of those people who we're advertising for to invest in the company will ultimately have the same problem that we're solving and therefore become users of our site.
Indeed, they will. That's an interesting perspective, of course. So any tips then for people who are preparing to be investment ready, if you like, who want to take their business onto a platform like Crowdcube and do a raise like Tutora has done?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's foolish to think that crowdfunding is purely a case of you creating a nice pitch, developing a video and then putting it up there and watching the kind of money come in. It is something that you have to do a lot of the legwork for. So you need to go out there, raise your presence, get involved in events, set up meetings with angels and contact people that you'd really like to gain the support of for your business. And I think that's social media and the advertising channels, connecting with forums, but it really is identifying those key investors that you'd like to come on board as the lead angels, who will then generate the momentum throughout the raise.
That momentum's crucial, isn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely
very much
critical.
So.
Okay, great stuff. And I suppose as a business in what you might term the sharing economy, if we think about other well-known businesses in there, are you disruptive? Do you describe yourself as a disruptor?
I don't know about that. I like to provide think of myself as an enabler.
Enabler, good.
I think, yeah,
good description.
There's been lots about the gig economy recently. And in my mind, I think it's when that those businesses replace an existing industry. And it means that individuals have a lack of choice. I think there's another way of looking at businesses like ours, in that we enable people to work flexibly in and around their other employment. I think when that employment is the only option for people, that's a very different debate than our business, which provides an additional service and ultimately allows people the flexibility that the internet can afford now.
Okay, thanks for that. That's a good perspective and interesting to hear you say that as well. And you're also creating jobs here in Sheffield, you mentioned. Yeah. So your tutors are self-employed, and then you're creating jobs as part of the team. How many people are you employing now?
Yeah, so if to be honest, I lose count because we're growing quite quickly. We only moved into a new office at the workstation here in Sheffield a couple of months ago, but we're having to upscale that. So we've got six now. We're looking to hire new developers, and we're also looking to take on SEO executives. So we'd welcome contact from those guys in the city.
So jobs being created. And again, probably if you think you fit the bill, then take a look at the website.
Yeah, very much so. We'll have some jobs up there very soon.
Okay, good stuff. What about finding an appropriate co-founder? You were friends with Mark. You knew each other before, and you had complementary skills, complementary experience as well, which obviously fitted the business. But for people who have a brilliant idea, have a great skill set, but feel they need a co-founder to come in at the same level to them. Yeah. How do they do it? Should they go to events? You know, where do you find a co-founder who can work with you?
Yeah, I think that's really tricky. And again, I was very fortunate in that. Mark and I have actually been friends since school. We were friends from the age of 14. I think for those people who are seeking co-founders, it's very much about getting the word out there about your idea, being happy to share that idea. Some people are reluctant to share great ideas because they think they're going to get stolen.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the top ideas are published online every year for people to solve.
They are indeed.
But I would say events like Startup Weekend. There's one in Derby coming up, which it would be a great event to get involved with. You get to pitch your idea and people will then come and join you and you'll work on it for the whole weekend. The University of Sheffield Enterprise, through people like Samantha Deakin. That's an excellent
place. Sam's been on the program.
Yeah, she was one of our mentors and has been invaluable, the help that she's offered. That would be a great place to go as well to hook up with other founders.
That's good to hear that as well. And coincidentally, of course, Elizabeth Chasser, who was on the program last week talking about Techstocracy, talked about going on Startup Weekend and what a quite literally life-changing experience it was for her too. So an endorsement from you there, Scott. That sounds good. That sounds great. I suppose I'd like to end on a note of you've made it all sound wonderfully smooth.
Yeah, I wish.
And we all know that in 18 months of running a business from the time you launched 18 months ago, and obviously before that in terms of pre-launch, it's not easy. There are challenges, there are hurdles that entrepreneurs have to overcome. What have been the biggest obstacles, challenges or hurdles that you've faced?
I think for me, it's a case of prioritizing. Every day we have a limited budget or we have to date. We have a limited number of resources, but we have an incredible amount that we'd like to achieve. So to be able to prioritize between new features that you'd like to push, spending, which role to fill and hire for, it's that decision making and prioritization is the key. I'd like to think we've done a good job of that to date, but I think you're learning all the time and we've made mistakes in the past. I think those kind of help us as we go forward.
So prioritization can be a challenge. I think lots of people will really recognize that and that will resonate with people. Yes, every business makes mistakes. It's critical to learn from them to move on. Well, that's clearly what you're doing, and people who are interested in Tutora can take a look at the website. And of course, if you actually like the look of the business, it is seeking a second round of investment at the moment, and that Crowdcube round only opened a week or so ago, but it appears to be moving very fast indeed.
Yeah, we're very lucky. We started on Tuesday and we're up to hopefully 50% now. Yeah. So yeah, we're well on our way to hitting our target, but we'd love more people to come on board.
Brilliant. Well, Scott Woodley, Tutora, thank you very much for coming in and talking with us about your growth and the business. And of course, we'll tweet some links out so people can take a look, as we do with all of our guests, and all the best with the next investment round.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having us on.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM, sheffieldlive.org. Let's have a quick track of music. We're going to play a bit of Lloyd Cole, Lost Weekend. This is Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. With me, Jamie Veitch. We've just been hearing from Scott Woodley of Tutora, business going from strength to strength. And before that, we've heard from Mark Harvey of ID8, who's working with the Cathedral Arch Project and running an event about challenging visual representations of homelessness. Now, if you've only just tuned into the programme, panic not. The podcast will be up on the Sheffield Live website from about 11 a.m. today. We talked a little bit earlier also about what's going on in business and social enterprise with the Bank of England's latest forecasts and Doncaster's buy local policy. But what else is happening? Well, Innovate UK have got up to £1 million available to support business projects that use early stage design activities to help them to identify innovation opportunities and generate new ideas. The aim, to encourage businesses to use design-led methods to understand customer motivations and behaviour, support decision-making and inform strategy. And according to the Design Council, £1 invested in early stage design can deliver as much as a £20 increase in revenues for a business. But many businesses rarely or never use design or tend to use it as a last resort. So it's a competition from Innovate UK. Deadline for registration, though, is midday on the 15th of February, so you better act quickly. Projects will range in size from £20,000 to £100,000 to be eligible and need to last for between 3 and 9 months. And you can attract up to 70% of your project costs. So it's worth taking a look at this. And it's under Funding Competition Design Foundations on the gov.uk website. As ever, I'll tweet the link out to that after the programme. Meanwhile, MPs have recommended postponement of the Making Tax Digital proposals. A Treasury Select Committee report has recommended that the start date for Making Tax Digital is postponed until 2019 at the earliest. And the feasibility of implementing the programme of tax reports, the tax reforms even, depends, according to the report, on government proposals that haven't yet been published. Andrew Tyrie, who's the Treasury Select Committee chair, said that timing is a concern. He said, without sufficient care, Making Tax Digital could be a disaster, and that it's better to take care on the road than to have a road accident, in his words. Meanwhile, other commentators have said that small businesses could cease to trade or move into the hidden economy if the proposals aren't rolled out correctly. There's an event coming up about how to protect your intellectual property abroad. Now, that's being hosted and run by the Business and Intellectual Property Centre Sheffield, and it's next Wednesday. It's the 8th of February, 2 o'clock in the afternoon till 4 p.m. It's free to attend. It's at the Central Library in Sheffield with Business and IP Centre Sheffield and their partners from the Intellectual Property Office. Perfect, they say, for businesses looking to protect their IP overseas. So go along to that workshop if that is relevant to you. If you're thinking about exporting, it can bring great possibilities, but also problems and issues, according to the organisers of the event, who say understanding these issues is key to making the most of exporting. And one of the key issues to get right is intellectual property. So you need to book. It's free to attend, but you need to book. And the details are on Eventbrite. If you go to eventbrite.co.uk and search for Business and IP Centre Sheffield, you should be able to find that event. But as ever, I'll tweet out the link to that one as well at the end of this radio programme. Oh, finally, Big Issue Invest. They've launched Impact Loans England. That's a new £5 million lending scheme aimed at enabling social enterprises to access loan funding of £20,000 up to £150,000. And it's available to organisations across England. That's £5 million in total to lend over the next 3 years. Available to organisations keen to do more of the good work that they do. Now, whether that's buying equipment, hiring new talent, or progressing with business development plans. And the head of lending at Big Issue Invest, Daniel Wilson Dodd, says lots of great organisations struggle to access small and medium-sized loans. So we wanted to provide support for those exciting social enterprises and charities. You want to find out more about that? Then take a look at bigissueinvest.com. Once again, of course, I'll put the link out to that in a tweet at the end of the programme. So nearly time for us to wrap up today's radio show. We'll be back on air next Friday from 9 through to 10, so tune in then. But don't go away now. Next up on Sheffield Live, our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk, running all the way from 10 through to noon. So do tune in to that. And my thanks to you for listening. My thanks also to Sangeeta in the radio studio today as our sound engineer. And thanks also, of course, to our guests today on the programme. We've heard from Scott Woodley, co-founder of Tutora, and from Mark Harvey, photographer. The podcast of the radio show will be up on the Sheffield Live website later on today, if you've only just tuned in. So we'll play out with a quick track of music. This is the Albion Band from the album The Vice of the People, and it's Wake a Little Wiser.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business life.